And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't remember what said. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome back to Warriors Plus Minus. This might be the most positive episode of the entire season after Tim Kawakami, Anthony Slater, and Ethan Strauss spent weeks talking about the mediocrity of the Warriors. They have gone on a four-game winning streak, dethroned the Utah Jazz and Phoenix Suns, and now they must give account. Speak for yourselves. Apologize to Dub Nation, you harbingers of mediocrity.
Wait, they dethroned?
I was going to go there, too. They dethroned the Utah Jazz.
Dethroned the Utah Jazz. They are no longer have the shine of a number one seed after what the Warriors did to them.
They've been kicked off of those mountains in Utah. They are no longer atop their pedestal. They've been replaced by the newly wealthy Juan Toscano-Anderson, which I'm sure we will get into.
I feel like we had to lean in, though, because Ethan basically wrote how Warriors Plus Minus has been ripping the Warriors and calling them average, and now we kind of got to go overboard because, you know, Ethan was hating in this column.
I like referencing our episodes because I do think to a certain extent we work out our thoughts on the team. And so I like referencing them in the articles, but I'm not resisting the positivity right now. I think it's pretty cool. It's fun to watch. They did win by a very small margin against the Suns. I kind of wonder what happens if Steph doesn't hit. You know, you wonder what happens if some bounces go the other way, if we're talking in this manner. But I do believe a lot of it will be dependent on the matchup. So they do think this team can punch above its weight in a playoff setting. I mean, that's the main thing.
We know the matchups. It's Utah or Phoenix. I don't think they'll beat either, personally.
Let me say what I mean by that specifically. I don't know who's playing for Utah or how healthy. And that makes a big difference. So I have an idea of Phoenix. Utah, I'm not so sure. I think between the two, and we can get into it, I probably want to go to Utah just based on that uncertainty. But I do think this team can be better in a playoff setting than they were in the regular season. And maybe we're going to sound like we're totally disavowing what we said before about how average, how mediocre, all the problems, all the flaws. Maybe I'm going to sound that way, but I do look at the postseason setting and I do say to myself, I'm not favoring them against those teams should they make it through the play-in crucible, but I don't think they should be scared of those teams. I don't think it'd be an upset that would be considered a greater upset than what the Warriors did to Denver in 2013. Is that crazy? Am I talking crazy? Am I a prisoner of the moment?
I do think if they get through the play-in, I actually think that if they match up with the Lakers, that's a tougher one-game setup, whatever, than getting through to play Phoenix would be. I think Utah will be tough if they're healthy, plus playing in Utah, we know how tough that can be. But if they get through, you know, I think Phoenix is... They play Frank Kaminsky. I'm just watching that game going, this is a number two seed that's playing Frank Kaminsky.
They'll probably end up playing Saric.
Someone said that he's ahead of Saric. Someone's like that, like, and I'm sure they're like, you know, who knows for that position. But, man, he's been playing a lot down the stretch. And that is not a good look for a number two team. A guy who, what, the Kings discarded from early in the season? They've got some holes there, is what I'm saying. They've got some things that I think that are a little tricky. They've got some really good players. I think Utah, if just one of Conley or Mitchell is available, is just going to be too tough. They're going to be too tough for a lot of people. But I think let's talk about the if they end up playing the Lakers, I think that's a really tough one for the Warriors. That's really tough.
Not only that, I think because they just beat Utah and Phoenix, people are too easily glossing over the team that matters more than the Lakers, the team that is really
Memphis.
The impediment. Yes, Memphis. Memphis is here Sunday. They have Jaren Jackson back. He's starting. They have the
and
best.
They're playing well.
They have the best offensive rebounder in basketball, Jonas Valanciunas. They have a tricky style for the Warriors, both sides, by the way. I mean, like, the Warriors are present very tough matchup with a young, mostly a young perimeter defense that hasn't faced Steph Curry. Like, I would favor the Warriors. They have to win that game to even get on the good side of the play-in, or else they're in a thorny situation.
Memphis might be a tougher matchup in this setting than Phoenix was. You know, just because of what's riding and just the matchups. I agree. Memphis is going to be a tough game for them.
Yeah, it's all small sample size too. So even if you favor them, there's a chance that you only make one out of every fifth three-pointer you take, right? So yeah, you can't look past it. I agree with that. I think, Marcus, are you with us that yes, favored over Memphis, but you can't take anything for granted in that small sample size?
What happened to this Warriors positivity? What happened to
Warriors
dethroning
positive
of teams? What happened to they're going to the NBA Finals? Like, you guys have already, like, they go on this great streak. They win without Steph Curry balling, and already you're talking about how much better Memphis is. You guys need to be ashamed of yourselves.
It was a good point till you straw-manned us. It was a good point until that exact moment.
By the way, you know, we're talking, like, if they lose to Memphis, they're not out of the playoffs. They're just in a lower bracket in the play-in. So, you know, you don't want to think like, oh God, they're out, they lost to Memphis. They're in the play-in. It's just what positioning they're going to be in the play-in, and, you know, what they have to start on the road, they start at home, whatever.
What it really is that game Sunday is deciding who gets the free swing at the Lakers and who gets the home game if, you know, you lose to the Lakers. You know, if the Warriors lose on Sunday, we assume either them or Memphis is going to beat a San Antonio team that doesn't have Derek White and is very beatable. They're not playing well at all right now. So you would win that, but then you'd have to go on the road for the 9-10 that is really the elimination game. If I had to predict what I think is going to happen, I think the Warriors are going to win Sunday. I think they're going to lose to the Lakers in the first play-in, and I would probably say they would beat Memphis again in Chase Center in the second play-in and be the 8 seed against Utah. That would be the path I would predict, but that is, like, there's a lot of unknowns there, and I just do feel like because of what Marcus is talking about, all this, you know, swirling positivity, people kind of have looked past the fact of, like, they still got a long way to go to even get in a series with Utah and Phoenix.
No question. And that's where the season-long mediocrity comes in. And this is the spot they've earned. This is the way they've played. 13-5 to this point in the last 18 is tremendous. And they are playing at a higher level, way higher level than they had been. But to that point, they were 4 games under .500. So you are what your record says you are. That's a truism that's always, always going to be viable. And we'll see where they go. But these last two games were to top off 13-5 were impressive. I think, you know, let's make sure we say that against two teams that wanted to win. You know, they're going for this top seed. If Phoenix had won, what was it, last night, whatever night it was, you know, they would have a shot at one. They got good players. They got Chris Paul. And I'll tell you one thing, the Warriors defense, we can talk about everything they do with Curry. We can talk about everything else that's flowing. But if they play this kind of defense with that kind of intensity, they're going to be in every game. They are. I mean, maybe a road game in Utah will be very tough for them if the threes fall, but that's for anybody. This defense is for real right now. I really do think that they're playing, I mean, I wouldn't say exceptional defense, but they're playing very good defense.
I think maybe that Phoenix game gave them a bit of a blueprint for how to win even when the shots aren't really falling. Play that level of defense. And to compensate for a disciplined veteran team selling out, trying to make you play left-handed, like Belichick used to say, just pound it inside, get buckets in the paint until the defense softens up. That might be a model for them once they get to these elimination game settings where teams are just not going to let Steph get any free and easy looks.
Teams might say, okay, is Andrew Wiggins going to go for that again in a playoff game? We'll see. Maybe he will. He did it that night, but we'll see.
And I think there's some agreement on this podcast unleash the pool is what I say. I mean, I could understand how an outsider who hasn't been watching the games, a non-Warriors watcher, a non-Warriors fan would look at Poole and say, what's the big deal? What is he shooting from the field? 42%, something like that? I know the efficiency is slightly above average when you incorporate free throws and everything else, but then when you watch it, and you can see that plays actually are getting made. The Warriors have had this problem recently in the postseason, the box and one problem where the ball gets kicked out and nothing happens with it. To me, it's amazing that Poole in his sophomore season is a positive plus minus guy. He's playing like 3/4 of his minutes without Steph Curry. I think that he's had in many ways a remarkable season, and they will need him, I think, more so than they've needed him in the regular season, just because of the different kinds of defenses that Steph Curry is going to be seeing in an elimination setting where these opponents are going to plan and scheme.
He's played well against the Jazz and Suns. You know, his breakout was they brought him back from the bubble. They went to Phoenix right before the All-Star break, and Steph and Draymond didn't play, and they kind of were like, all right, well, let's see if this translates. And he went out and he was like cooking Javon Carter and Jay Crowder, which he did again the other night in a couple isolation situations, and it was like, whoa, these are good defenders. You guys remember that night? It was like 25.
Oh, yeah.
A very low stress environment, but it was still like, you know, it was like, you know, yes, he played a very good team, but he kind of did it in a G League way where they, you know, no Curry. And then after that, he kind of obviously went on that roll. But you remember that game, which, you know, Wiseman played well in too, which was a home win over the Jazz, you know, I think it was like an afternoon game, and Poole was like played well down the stretch. I think he had something like 20 in that game. They survived the non-Curry miss. It was the first time they put Poole, Mannion, and Wiseman on the floor together, which was a risk at the time. Now it's just Poole remaining in the rotation, and he just put 20 off the bench in a row against the Jazz and Suns in back-to-back nights, which, you know, again, do we want to jump ahead? That could be their first round opponent. So yes, to me, he's proven that he should earn more minutes, and to me, whose minutes he should take, even though we're just talking about
Michael thin... Ballmer, yes.
Steph, yes. Curry. No.
Steph Curry. Whoa. He should play more with Steph Curry.
This is going to sound mean, but we've been mean about Mulder before. He's an NBA player. He's trying out there. But whose baskets, I don't care what the percentages are, whose buckets seem to always mean more, Jordan Poole's or Michael Mulder's? It's Poole's buckets seem like they're worth 5 points sometimes, just because of when they come, it's off of action that the defense isn't looking for. And Mulder's is always standing in the corner, wide open three that Curry creates, clank. You know, he'll go 1 for 3, and the one will be kind of when they're already up by 7. And Poole's are like, they're down by 1, open court, what's going to happen? Oh, the ball just went in, they're up 2. You get full credit for that stuff. Like, that's game-turning stuff, no question. And he'll clank 3, right? I mean, we know that. But he'll take it. He'll take it in confusing action. He'll take it when it's really important, and he's going to make a lot of them. Which, again, yeah, I'd say this run, Jordan Poole, JTA, and Wiggins have been... You know, we know how great Steph and Draymond are. We can talk about them, and we always do, but those three, I think, have been just huge and significant, and it tells you about next season, too, I think.
Per 36 minutes, what do you think the plus-minus is for Steph and Jordan Poole together on the floor?
Just because of the way you presented that, I assume it's pretty
plus
good.
Plus 1,050.
Not quite there, but it's average. We're doing per game.
Plus 8, 7 or 8.
Plus 15.2.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
He's going to get targeted. Like, the other night, I was a little surprised. I did the post-game podcast with Nate, and he was really surprised that, like, Phoenix should have targeted him a bit more, tried to get him on Devin Booker. And, you know, like, that is Kerr's concern, right? It's like these good teams will go, there's the 21-year-old. There's, like, the smaller guard that doesn't really know where he's at defensively. Let's go after him. And in a series, maybe Monty Williams, you know, if that was game one of the series, maybe Monty Williams goes back to look, goes, if Jordan Poole's on the floor late in the game, we got to get Devin Booker in isolation, Chris Paul, like, you know, to get to some of his counter moves. So that will be something to monitor. But it's not like Michael Mulder's out there just, like, you know, stopping people.
Or Bazemore, for that matter.
Yeah. Well, you think Chris Paul's sees a few fouls when he sees Kent Bazemore roaming around.
Bazemore stopping them just because he puts his arm into their body and their body stops. But I will say, you know, I'm sure the playoffs will be different. That Monty Williams offense was not looking very fluid. It was basically Booker, go get him. You know, okay, CP3, go get it. It didn't have a lot of flow to it. Maybe
and that was
just
two nights in a row, right? Because Phoenix did the same thing with Jordan Clarkson.
The Lakers. Yeah, and all I'm saying, the Lakers. Do you see the Phoenix against the Lakers?
Oh, yeah, same thing.
Terrible. Oh,
but they just doubled Booker and was like, yo, he doesn't handle doubles well.
We saw that from that offseason video, right? It still hits me when I see that offseason video for some reason. I always tell people, don't obsess on video you're just seeing. But he's mad at somebody in a pickup game. Double team. Yeah, I know. It's like, you're an NBA player. Get
Joe
used to it.
Joakim
like,
Noah.
That is not a flowing offense right now. You just don't see it. Like the Jazz, whatever, that was like they got a flowing offense. It's going to be tough to just kind of trick them up defensively. They got so many shooters. Jordan Clarkson is not going to shoot the ball 33 times in a playoff game if either one of Conley or Mitchell's healthy. But the Suns, they haven't looked so good for a little while.
We're talking in this right now. There's somebody who might be signing a contract. I wonder if it's happening right now, Anthony Slater.
I think it'll be happening in a couple hours, maybe an hour.
But wouldn't it be better if it was happening right now?
It could
Whoever
be.
Whoever it was, he
honestly
couldn't sleep. He said he was up at 5:30 a.m. because he couldn't sleep. This day, May 13th, 2021, is the day that Juan Toscano-Anderson becomes a legitimate full contract NBA player.
If he was that stoked for it, I'm sure right now the Warriors go, man, we could have gotten him on that partial guarantee.
That was the big drama of all this, was he'd played himself into such a standing that he kind of had a little bit of a leverage in how he wanted next season's contract construct a little bit. They actually gave him a bit more money for this season, which is tax money, I think, to ensure next season he would, you know, that wasn't going to be thorny and he was going to be looking for more than the minimum. They have him on the minimum next season, which at this point I think we'd all call a bargain. It is fully guaranteed. I think they were comfortable doing that because to them, he's not going to camp trying to earn a spot
next season.
He's got it. So they're okay with that. They actually wanted more control beyond next season, which at this point he's betting on himself. Like, you know, they would have loved obviously to have tacked on a year, maybe even at guaranteed, but particularly obviously if it was non-guaranteed. But no, he'll be a free agent after next season.
That was the interesting part. Why they just didn't throw a few mil at him and lock him in?
Tax money?
I mean,
would be my guess.
Like the third year.
They don't believe in the sustainability of shooting 72% on two-pointers. I mean, maybe that. Look,
well, I mean, they are pretty easy two-pointers. They're like, hey, two defenders are over there and I'm dunking over here. Like,
yeah, he's part of what they are. He's part of what they are. I think Ethan and I were talking about this before the show. He's ahead of Eric Paschal. Done. He's ahead of him. That's not even a debate right now. So if he's ahead of Eric Paschal, then he's on the, you know, he's in the rotation next season in some form or fashion. When Wiseman comes back, if they draft a forward, it doesn't matter. JTA is in the rotation in some form. And he has earned it. He's smart. He's smart defensively. He's basically Draymond when Draymond comes off the floor in offensively and defensively. It's, you know, in a lesser version. But that's still, who have been able to say that about in Draymond's history with the Warriors? Nobody. There's been nobody who can duplicate some of the things that he does. JTA's earned this. You know, I'm someone who didn't see a huge role for him as long as Wiseman was on the active roster. But give Juan Toscano-Anderson a huge credit for once Wiseman was off the roster, this guy showed that he should have been playing more. No question he should have been playing more. And this is how you do it. You do it by playing. You do it by being good. You don't do it by any other way. And he's been excellent for them, certainly in the last 18 games, no question.
I mean, it does validate some of what we've been talking about, which is that I don't think that they need Oubre next season. The guys that they can fill that role with, I mean, obviously Oubre helps the depth, but the guys that they can fill the role with have been punching well above their weight, especially on this recent run, and that does include Bazemore. And so it just seems like that was an attempt by the Warriors. They spent money to do it. They took a bet on a guy in his mid-20s that had shown flashes, had potential, had pedigree. But it does look like we've had enough evidence now to draw the conclusion, and it's probably Warriors and Oubre, probably not the most mutually, I don't even know what to call it. It's just not
beneficial.
A great fit. Yeah, beneficial. It's just not a great fit.
I'll give you the JTA stat that is glaringly important right now. 35 of 85 from three, 41% from three this season. Very small sample size, but if that is him, like right now, when he steps up for a three, including the other night, he hit two big ones, including one that got called off because it was like late shot clock, but he hit it and it, you know, it almost was ruled good. Like if he steps up for a three right now, you feel pretty confident in it. That's completely changed his career.
So TK, who do you feel more confident with, Mulder or JTA taking that three?
And if it's during an important moment, I'll take JTA taking it. Absolutely. We crush them. It's mean, but there are guys like Michael Mulder who shoot great when it doesn't count, shoot wonderfully when it doesn't count, and then when it counts, they don't shoot great. We've seen it. We've seen him on the Warriors, and that's kind of who he is, and that's fine because he'll make them once in a while. But guys like JTA who do play two ways, who scrap, who steal the ball, get in transitions, can finish in transition, and hit the three, those are
players. And get under the skin of the opposing
superstar. Well, absolutely. Everybody. Yeah, everybody. He's going out there, and Booker's a hothead, and JTA got into him a little bit.
You think JTA wants a series-long crack at Booker? Yes, that would turn into a story.
Yes, and CP3. But, we talk about Oubre, and obviously it's been a theme of mine. They play the Suns, who have CP3 and Devin Booker, right? Two guys you need to guard, two good outside threats. And the Warriors did just fine without Kelly Oubre, right? You think they could use another one, and they probably could.
Did they do just fine?
They won the game. They won the game.
Yeah, they won a regular season game. Yeah, calm down.
I just don't think it's that. I don't think he's worth what he's.
Who are you putting on Chris Paul in that situation? Who are you putting on Chris Paul?
Well, who they put
Steph
on him.
Steph Curry.
It's not Steph Curry. You put Bazemore on him, and you put Wiggins on Booker, or you have,
You're living with that? I think that's a setup.
I think I'll take that off the way it works offensively. Absolutely, I'll take the way that works offensively. And, you need more out of Bazemore, but he gave you more in that game. Again, there's still a third unnamed third player that they'd have to have. I'm saying that third player for $4 million is going to give you just as much or more sometimes than Kelly Oubre at $18 million. That's been my point the whole time. Would you rather have Kelly Oubre than not have Kelly Oubre? Yes. Would you rather have Kelly Oubre at 18 or an Avery Bradley-like player at $4 million? Give me Avery Bradley-like player at $4 million every single time. Silence? Nobody arguing with that one?
Avery Bradley, I don't know. I'm kind of, yeah. Avery Bradley is in complete decline.
No, I said like. I didn't say Avery Bradley. Okay, I said Avery Bradley like player.
How about Davion Mitchell? How about Davion Mitchell with the ninth pick that you're getting from the Timberwolves?
Give me a top draft pick. Yeah, but I mean, how many players aren't you taking a top draft pick over in that middle tier? Like,
if you take a 19-year-old, you wouldn't want him in the rotation. But you take Davion Mitchell, but put him right in the middle of their rotation. I think they're fine. Hey, I'm not saying Damian Lee is better than Kelly Oubre, but if Damian Lee is giving him minutes, he's giving him some interesting minutes, and he's playing with Steph. Kelly Oubre, I don't want to play with Steph. So I just think if you're talking about an $18 million player who isn't too happy about coming off the bench, as he said himself, man, I'd rather have somebody who could be a role player, fit in and play with Steph, and then also be an offensive force in a second unit. Give me Damian Lee, whatever number that's going to be. Let's take Avery Bradley, like off. Let's just say Damian Lee. I'll take that, and let me use that salary for something else.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
I just feel that in the NBA, incumbency, it weighs so heavily that we don't readjust our priors. That when a guy is drafted high, when he's athletic especially, He just gets a lot of chances, and we keep waiting for something to happen, and we don't just assess the evidence. We don't just look at the situation and say, look, when Kelly Oubre was playing, this team was not playing well overall this season. Certain games, yeah, but overall, what was he? He was in the minus. I think he was minus four per 36, I think, off the top of my head. And when some of these guys who are unheralded were playing, the Warriors were in the positive. And yeah, that's not just about, you can say watch the games and stuff, but it's also just, if you watch the games, I mean, they were constricted. Teams could sag off him. He never passed, and he still has a lot of time in his career to maybe change some of those habits, but I just think it's a situation where guys who are considered to be worse, quote-unquote, contribute more to winning. That's just what I've seen this season.
And that's like a baseball valuing there. But I think it's, you know, like, hey, if you can get a guy from a group of players who make 5 million tops, you do that versus a guy from a group of players who can make 18. If your guy making 5 million is better than that guy making 16, or two of those guys, or three of those guys, that's very money ball. And
Juan Toscano
doesn't work in the playoffs.
Well, no, you need great players too. I mean, nobody's saying
talent. I just have a hard time turning down the most talented player because he doesn't fit. You tell me Oubre is never going to change and has no interest in being different. All right,
give
you
the minutes to Poole is what I say.
Poole's if we want talent, though.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you want the talent. If you want the talent, then I'm going with the talented guy who at least is going to open things up on offense.
You're telling me, now that's not what we're not talking about Oubre or Poole. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about you in the playoffs and you got to guard Bogdan Bogdanovic or Devin Booker or Donovan Mitchell. You're telling me you're putting Jordan Poole on him? You literally have to answer these questions. You have to.
But at least those guys then have to guard Poole on the other side. I don't think
There are other players that will guard them. That's a whole part of a team. You're telling me before this year, you would have said Jordan Clarkson has this much value? You wouldn't have said that. I'm just saying you take talented players, you find a fit for them, and you make it work. I'm not even saying Kelly Oubre has to be that.
When is Oubre getting buckets like Clarkson? I mean, we talk about talent.
When was
talent.
Clarkson getting buckets like Clarkson?
Clarkson's
always been a scorer. He's always been a scorer.
He's about to win like sixth man of the year. My point is, you wouldn't have said this would be Clarkson before this was Clarkson. That's my point.
Marcus, can I ask you though? Like, do you think it kind of seems like Steve Kerr and Steph Curry and Draymond Green, like their preferred style and their stubbornness to that style has proven this season that they want to play like this, and that doesn't fit Oubre. Where you're right is, like, you know, more flexibility at times can be very good in the NBA. Like a guy like Greg Popovich has shown flexibility to the personnel, but Kelly Oubre clearly doesn't fit how the Warriors prefer to play. And right now, while we complain all season about it, right now the Warriors are kind of proving like this just better for them. So maybe Kelly Oubre just does not fit them at all, even though he could fit others.
I agree, but I actually think he fits how Steve Kerr wants to play. He doesn't fit how Steph Curry wants to play, and that's the problem. It's not Draymond loves Oubre, loves him. So it's not necessarily the defensive issue. It's the reason the Warriors took off is because they decided to play the best style for Steph Curry.
Yes. Yeah, they don't have a problem with it's offense.
What are we talking about when we say talent is the other thing? Are we talking about shooting? Because I don't really see that. Are we talking about assists? Are we talking about passing vision? Because I don't really see that. I think we're talking about athleticism, and that's great. But
defensive acumen matters. You put Kent Bazemore on a superstar at the end of the games, he's going to get cooked. Period.
Yeah, how many times Oubre locks somebody down at the end of the game? I don't recall a lot of that. I recall him making steals at half court, but I don't recall him saying,
yeah, you can
oh
put
my
him
God,
on a
Oubre
point guard. Should. Yes, you can put him on a point guard. Like, yeah, that has no value with the Warriors?
I think, where am I saying he has no value? I'm saying he's going to cost $16 million.
No. What you're saying is, like, grab a minimum vet dude and just throw him on, and that's better.
Yes,
I'm saying
Kent Bazemore has been better for the Warriors than Kelly Oubre, period, this season. There is not a doubt. There is not a doubt in my mind. And he's a minimum veteran.
All right, we've devolved too deep into Kelly Oubre conversations. He's at this point not even really part of the rotation at this point.
What are the chances he can come back? What are the
not high. Not high, to be honest.
It's kind of, I'm saying there's the musk of David Lee going down, is all I'm saying, with the Soubre situation. The musk of David Lee. That's all I'm saying.
Well, let's just say this. Okay, they're playing really well right now. And the other guy who's not playing is James Wiseman. Can James Wiseman fit into what they're doing here? Or should they even try to do it next season when he's healthy?
Nah, he's done. You got to go. He's got to go. Just get loony and Minimums. Grab another big from somewhere.
The sense I get is they will flip into a completely patient developmental path for him. They will they will ease him in with a knee injury, and they'll use that as a way to be like, look, he's going to come off the bench. He's going to like
second unit.
Yeah. And then when he is on the court, you know, they'll have units that they feel like fits him. And I think Steve Kerr does, and I think he knows this, needs to show a bit of flexibility of like, you know, they're not going to make him do DHOs and float around and do bogus stuff. Like when he's on the court, he'll be running pick and rolls. And, you know, if he doesn't make sense in closing lineups at all next season for the first 3 months, he just won't be in them. And I don't think they're going to trade him because I don't think there's necessarily a sense that his value is on the market this summer will be nearly what they still believe his prospect value is long term. I think they just start to view this as a next era project that's going on at the same time that they're still trying to win with next season's team. And maybe that's not the right value play. And we'll see what other like potential offers might be on the table. But my expectation is Wiseman will be on the team next season. And they'll just be trying to slowly develop him while also trying to win the title. And that, you know, that's not easy. But that's what I expect to be going down.
And if he gives them more, he gives them more, right? You know, like this season, obviously, it's clear. They saw so much from him in those early workouts before training camp that they went, this guy just has to play, right? They just made that quick decision. He's so talented. And we saw some video of it. He's just taking a defense rebound, taking six dribbles and dunking or whatever. You know, these athletic things that nobody else can do at 7 feet tall. But then he starts playing, and it doesn't fit so good. So I think they got hit with they kind of shot too high with him by getting overexcited early on, and then got disappointed because it didn't work when they start him in game one. And they do, you know, they build a lot of things based on what James Wiseman's going to do this season. And it's just better if you just pull it back. You know what? You're 20 years old. Play 15 minutes a game. Kevon Looney, probably, you know, Marquese Chris or some other center is going to have to be in that mix because we know they played a ton of centers. And yeah, he's a second unit center. I think that's, and maybe the injury helps him slow it down a little bit. And where there's not like rush, get him in there. I was one of the rush people because you see the talent. But this 13-5, which could end up in 15-5, it could end up whatever it's going to end up. I think it's the key to slowing it all down for James Wiseman. I don't think after a summer of whatever he's going to jump right in.
A big slowdown.
No question. That too.
They can mitigate some of the damage he did to the cause by going away from the post-up game. I just don't think that's his future. Maybe I'm calling it too early. I don't know. I think he's a face-up guy, and I think whatever they're working on in the offseason has to be devoted to that. It's about developing that outside shot. It's about pump faking off of that shot, not traveling. And if he's got that, if he can model his game more off a Chris Bosh than a, God, I don't know what kind of player I'm thinking of, a Greg Monroe, Al
it's
Jefferson.
It's about defense, too.
He's
just, you know, that's next season's thing, is he just needs to become increasingly more survivable defensively. Like, can you put him out there and just survive?
And it's funny, you look at Looney and you go, what is he really doing out there defensively? I mean, it's just a subtle step in the right direction. It's a lean, knowing which way the ball's going. Because he's not doing, like, he's not super, that's Wiseman's issue. He's, like, reacting to everything and doing two steps one way, three steps the other way, and then he's completely out of position. And Looney just stays where he's supposed to stay. He doesn't rush anywhere. And, by the way, he's rebounding now. I guess we should give him kudos for that, the Looney lane here. He's rebounding like hell right now. He's tremendous on the boards. And that's what, yeah, Wiseman just like economy of motion maybe would be a supreme thing for him.
I think it's that, and Looney by reputation when you talk to the coaches is a scouting report superstar. He understands what the guy's move is, what shoulder he turns off, where he likes it on the court, and exactly what to do. Now, I don't know how hard Wiseman studies up, and I don't know how easy it is for him to incorporate what he does study up on in the heat of the moment, this early juncture of his career. that is the hidden value of Looney, is just studying and just knowing, and knowing some of the things that we don't necessarily know going into it. So I think it's definitely a learning process for him. I talked to Looney about what it was like when he was Wiseman's age on this team in this situation. Now, as much as we're praising the Warriors, I don't think that they're the best organization at bringing in young talent and understanding what young guys need. I think Looney felt very much like he was on the outside looking in first couple seasons, and he made it, you know, and Wiseman, it will be up to him ultimately. But I think it's also a learning process for the Warriors is what I'm saying. I mean, the idea that Wiseman didn't miss just one test, but he missed two tests when he missed those coronavirus tests off of the All-Star break. Yeah, that's on Wiseman, but that's also perhaps a situation where the Warriors just have the expectation that their players are all veterans who have been to the finals multiple times and they don't have to do some handholding. I think they might have learned some lessons that they got to do some handholding. But
he's not yet as mature as Sean Livingston. No way.
I know.
I'm just saying, man, the dude speaks Mandarin. Like,
yes, he does. That is true.
By the way, when Looney, we also remember when Looney was as old as Wiseman, that was like 27 years ago. So, you know, it was a different era.
Different Benjamin era. He was smoking. He was smoking cigarettes in the locker room. I remember interviewing him.
Garden George Mikan.
These are off-season conversations. We have a playoff.
I was getting ready to say. Wait, hey. So hold up, Slay. Before you go, a lot of what we're talking about, like how the Warriors are succeeding. I mean, one of the real reasons is that Draymond is playing more five, right? And they're getting to go small, and Draymond is highlighted. We've been saying all year, you know, no Wiseman, no Oubre. It's a big part of it that, you know, Steve just doesn't believe you can play Draymond like this for too long of a stretch. And is he right about that? Because Draymond's shooting 50% from the field over the last 2 months. And so we're seeing a nice chunk of time where Draymond is looking really good and getting better and stronger. Is Steve right that you can't do this as a steady diet and the need for a Wiseman is actually there?
Well, you know, how much longer is Draymond Green going to last? You know, and to me, like if we're really talking about the Wiseman, particularly at this point, and we don't have to go back and debate why they picked him. But what James Wiseman now at this point is like a 2023 thing. You know, he's beyond Draymond. He's next era and maybe traded in between then. But I'm just saying in this moment, I mean, like Draymond could survive in spurts, but I think part of the reason like Draymond is revving it up now, like they keep acting like Draymond has had this unbelievable season. I don't think he's had that great of a season. I think he's had a great month. I think he's had a great month and a half. I think he's had defensive spurts here and there. He is a center now. And Eric Paschal's a center, I guess, at this point. Everyone's a center. You know, power forwards have now just been shifted down. If you can't shoot threes, you're a center. Russell Westbrook last year, the Rockets started calling him their center because he doesn't shoot jumpers. Or that's when he stopped shooting jumpers. So, sure. Draymond Green makes a lot more sense as a center. It's kind of the modern NBA. It's what makes the Wiseman pick more questionable, but I can't sit here and question it because I was a proponent of it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
I would hope that Steve is right in the sense that he's saving up for this moment to do it a whole lot. That's what I would say. And I think that there is a lot of validity to that, that you're going to burn him out if you are just doing this in the regular season, game after game. But now you lose, you go home. And it's their most potent look is Draymond at center. It's one of the reasons why I said what I said at the beginning of the podcast, and I wrote what I wrote, that I think this is a better playoff team than it is a regular season team. It's not just, let's say, the injuries that might have helped them in the aggregate. It's also this, that Draymond at center is a chaotic look for the opposition. It's hard to contend with when Steph is also on that counterattack with him. And I just think they're going to have to use it a whole lot. Maybe you have a little bit of Looney to supplement it, to not have him out there the whole time, but it's got to be the bulk of the attack. I think you're going to need him in most minutes if they're going to make some noise in the playoffs.
You know, I look at this kind of the reverse of saying, should Draymond play center? It's, do they have a forward who can match him with and be a good, versatile four? And when they had Iguodala and Durant and Harrison Barnes, they could do it because those guys could guard up. They could still be threats, you know, in the break and on at the three line and be a power forward and kind of, you know, share that big man position, even though they're not a big man, with Draymond, and be versatile and move the ball. It quickens them up. You can't have a four who slows you down if Draymond is your five. And guess what? That's where JTAs fit in with this. It's like they didn't have that guy. Who would have been that guy? It was Oubre, I think, for a little bit. It's not clearly not Pascal. Guess what? JTA is that kind of guy, which again just adds to the JTA value, that can run with Draymond when Draymond's a five, that can guard up, can guard, you know, bigs, you know, can whack the ball away, can get in transition. That's what speeds them up. It doesn't help you if Draymond's a five and you have a slow four. It doesn't help you if Draymond's a five and you have a weak four. You've got to have a versatile Durant, Iguodala, Harrison Barnes four when they're playing small.
They got Wiggins, JTA's though, been, right?
That's, yeah, Wiggins is, can't, he doesn't go up like that. Yeah, he doesn't quite that's go Wiggins up like that. Yeah.
Did you see JTA's the lob he caught? What do you mean? Did you? Hey, not you know,
guard up. I know. Up like
do you know?
Guard
do you know?
Like
who, you know who goes up? You know who goes up?
Michael Mulder. No, go ahead.
Kelly Oubre.
No, he's good at that. He's good at that. Kelly he's very good at that.
He does that. That's true.
I'm just saying it takes a special kind of forward to pair with Draymond at the five. And we've seen what it is. And JTA gives them a lot of those things. And you've got to spread the floor. You got to play some defense. You got to be able to switch. It's not Eric Pascal. You know, and Wiggins is much more comfortable playing just a pure small forward. JTA, there's your value. Should have got more, JTA. I could have negotiated for you. Extreme value with the Warriors in when they go small. Extreme value.
The consensus, though, is that this is not something they can lean into. Like, I mean, they're clearly a better. No, I mean, like, next season in the future. Like,
I do agree with Kerr that you don't want to play Draymond a full season at center. You're not going to get the end effect that you want, which is Draymond at center at his best going into the playoffs, which is what they've got right now. I think it would wear him down. I think we'd see more injuries. You know, this is one of the few times he hasn't gone in the end of the season with an injury, right? Or some issue, and who knows what's going to happen. But like you want a fresh Draymond, and I think Draymond playing it like this on this sort of schedule is the way you want. And so you can go into the playoffs saying, okay, he's going to play 20 minutes at center, period. Whoever we're playing, he's playing 20 minutes at center. I don't know you could do that if he'd been worn down all season.
How long do you think Draymond's going to last?
Well, he signed for what, three more years, right? So
3 more years. Yeah, no, he's on the books for big money for 3 more years, for, you know, basically 25 a year or so. And you know, that's the big question. We'll see how he looks over the next couple of weeks.
You got to go year by year if you're planning for basketball, but you do have Wiseman. So like if you say okay, we play
that's
it like
kind of my
for,
point on it.
Yeah,
that's
you play
kind of
like
point
this.
On
yeah, we, you play it like this for another year. You play like this for another year. You see where Wiseman is at the end of next season, and you plot from there. I think you really got to go year by year with Draymond at this point. You have to go year by year with Steph, not in the same dynamic, but can you go, okay, Steph's going to be an MVP caliber player for the next 3 years? You cannot say that. You can't say that about anybody who's 34 years old. It's amazing that we are saying it about Steph now at 34. So, you know, if you go year by year with how you judge this, I think at least you have Wiseman. You can start to shift it when you feel like Wiseman's ready to take it over, whenever that is. And that might not be for 2 years.
I'm texting Warriors coach the 15.2 Steph and Poole together stats. So if Poole is awful in the postseason, you know, maybe you can blame it.
Ethan behind the scenes, mastermind.
Just nudging the Ouija board in the directions I want it to go for the articles I want to write. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing behind the scenes. I'm just
Will it be a disappointment if it's not Warriors, Lakers in the play-in? Yes, I think it will be. But, I mean, it's all building up to that. It would be a tremendous, I think it would be a very tough game for the Warriors, but I think it would be tremendous to watch.
LeBron still hasn't come back for the game.
Yeah, but he was talking. Yeah.
He should soon. Come back it's Saturday. Yeah. But they keep pushing
it's
it back.
Weird, the reporting is so weird. It's like his ankle is the most amazing ankle you have ever seen. It is shining in the light. It has never been stronger. And then it's, we're going to push it back a week. We're going to push it back more. It's just that high ankle sprain is tough, man. That's a tough injury. That's not like a regular common ankle. Sprain. I don't know what to think. I just know that even if he's compromised, the Lakers are still scary. Not just because of Anthony Davis, but because they're big and they've got veterans.
They're like the kryptonite. Yeah, they're the opposite of what the Warriors are.
Yeah, Frank Vogel has them as like the top defense in basketball for a long stretch without Davis and LeBron. Like that is just like a sharp, veteran, well-coached defense. Davis, while he sat with a groin injury recently, and I do worry about his health over the long haul of the playoffs, when he has played recently, he's been back to his old self. He's getting like 42 15s and a bunch of blocks.
I will say, not against Draymond. There's one guy who's guarded him pretty well his whole career is Draymond.
I just remember Draymond. I remember Draymond in the locker room in that first. This is a long time ago, but it was the
2015.
Yeah. That playoff series against the Pelicans, and it was that crazy comeback that had that crazy Steph shot. And we were in the locker room afterwards, and I remember we were all in there, and Draymond and you were talking. You were asking about how Davis would just start killing Draymond at the beginning of the game, and then over time he would fade, and then it was Draymond who was making plays at the end of the game. And you asked him about it, and you asked Draymond, but how come you don't fade? And Draymond looked at you and he just pounded his chest and he yelled, "Cause I'm all hurt, motherfucker." That's my memory of that matchup.
How did that not get in the book? I did not see that in Victory Machine.
Not enough Draymond in the book.
That's not the Draymond book.
Not enough Draymond.
If KD had said it, that's in the book.
KD would have been like, because you said this and that about me.
All right, Ethan's getting punched right over. He's about to say something he shouldn't on
it. Yeah. I think he might have already, by the way.
Is it better for the Warriors if Portland somehow falls to the 7?
Yes. Oh, yes. 100%.
No question. Yeah, they got a hex on Portland that is explainable in many ways, but is unexplainable in some other ways. And they just beat Portland. I think they would love that.
Portland has the 29th ranked defense. They have bench units that include Enes Kanter and Carmelo Anthony. They're more exploitable.
Their strength is the Warriors' strength in a sense, right? Like, yeah.
The people, I mean, it's funny. It's like the Lakers are the team that the Warriors don't want to see, but that's the team everybody wants them to play, right? That's what we want to see. But yeah, there's no question. There's no question that matchup is nowhere near as...
If they got Portland to one win and you're in the playoffs, jeez, that would be perfect for winning. And if you happen to lose, you get another swing at it. That would be like an ideal play-in setup for them, having gone through the season they've gone through. If it's that setup, yeah, if the Lakers keep winning, I think, wait, if the Lakers keep winning, they're the 6 and Portland's the 7 or some permutation.
No, Portland or Dallas has to go 0-2 and the Lakers have to go 2-0 at this point.
Oh, okay. I thought the Lakers would get in, but if it's Portland, jeez.
It was last night, the Lakers without Davis and LeBron barely survived the Rockets. If they had lost that game, which they almost did, I think they needed like, a Kuzma floater with like 5 seconds left, then they would already be locked into 7. So it's
after
very,
THT
very likely.
Got stopped trying to hit the game winner. He kicked it out to Kuz who came through in a clutch.
Yeah. They're very weird. Likely to be 7. But to me, I keep saying it. Memphis is the team. I'm writing basically a Warriors Memphis preview because essentially it might even end up being a 2-game series for the playoffs because it's like the battle for 8 and then what's probably because I think the Lakers will beat either. Then it's probably going to be like the real play-in elimination 8 versus 9 once one of them beats San Antonio. So Memphis is the team Warriors followers and their coaching staff and scouting need to really be focused on. That's the team they need to beat.
They're just not fun to think about. I mean, that's what it is. Like, compared to the Lakers. I think they're more fun than
people believe.
Yeah, they got some good players.
They got some good players. But the Lakers, that's epic. The thing that's on everybody's mind that we're not talking about, but everybody's thinking about it, is just the theater, the drama, the suspense of the Warriors potentially pulling the little Giants. I'm sounding like Fitz. An impossible win, a miracle.
Warm up the bus, baby.
Warm up the bus. It's over. Oh, forget about it. This is terrible. Oh my God.
But yeah, like them pulling off an upset in a playoff situation against the Lakers and putting LeBron in peril, it's hard not to think about that and to overlook Memphis and the other scenarios. Just because, let's face it, if that happens, at that point, it's like the season's a success. At that point, it's a success, and nobody cares about any of the downsides, any of the downturns, any of the disappointments, the fact that they're in the play-in instead of the actual playoffs. None of that matters if they help the Lakers possibly get eliminated. I think that it's hard not to think about it, even though we all agree that that's a very tough matchup for them.
I don't think we know how tough of a matchup it is. I do think Memphis is a really good team. They're dangerous. They're men with Jackson. They're just better. But, I mean, people watched the Warriors beat them pretty well, and then lost a game they probably should have won, both without Steph Curry, right? So, in Memphis. So, I just don't think people see them as the threat. And that's why it's probably not your focus on. But I'm sure when Slater's done, they're going to be like, oh, man, them Grizzlies. You better watch out.
They're not the threat that the Lakers are, but they're just the team they have to beat.
They're not an easy win. Yeah, they're not going
to
be a pushover.
The Lakers, I assume, is going to be a loss, but they don't have to beat the Lakers to get in the playoffs. That's the big thing. They have to beat the Grizzlies to get in the playoffs. And that, to me, is the difference. And the other thing with the Lakers, as far as matchups go, like LeBron, we've seen it this season. LeBron just reads everything they do off ball. And that
he
team
knows
that.
Every play they got,
and they're such a good defense. Like they just handcuff the Warriors' offense, so that's a problem.
And it's LeBron.
Plus Steph
and AD.
Staples Center is not.
That's not
matchup.
Good. LeBron and AD. That's just
two things. Number one, we all know Ethan really just wants to see his game so he can see what the ratings are and then compare it to what eventually is the finals ratings.
I've been thinking about that.
It is on my mind. Like, it is crazy. I mean, can we say as an aside, now the NBA season is nearly done, the fact that the Warriors are the second biggest draw in basketball, despite being, as we've said, average the whole time, I think speaks to how they have become, at least with Steph, like a public team versus the absolute dregs of the NBA before Steph, who nobody would watch. And I think that is just a cultural phenomenon.
And who's number one? Is it the New York Knicks, maybe?
It might have been if the Knicks, actually got put on TV.
Lakers.
Lakers, and frankly, I don't even really know if they're the biggest draw. I mean, it sort of depends on how you view it, but I think if you start parsing the matchups, you could argue that the Warriors were a bigger draw on account of LeBron getting hurt at least this season. But yeah, I think it's Lakers, Warriors, and then everybody else.
And my number two thing I'm going to get just absolutely laughed off the podcast about, I need to go do a Laker podcast forum club where I think we're actually even going to preview the likely Warriors Lakers playoff game. So listeners, you can end the podcast. These guys are going to keep talking about ratings or whatever.
He's going to go, hey, Frank Vogel, when you want to beat the Warriors, here's what you got to do. One, two,
you can
three.
Stop this podcast and go over to the forum club and listen to the play-in preview. But I got to go to that.
The
you guys can close
club,
it out.
Like you're hanging out with Jack Nicholson. Incredible.
I'm going to go do that right now.
It's like the Forum Club, the actual Forum Club, right? The red carpet to drop off.
The Forum Club, when there was Forum Boxing with Jerry Buss actually in attendance. Oh, man. I'll just say, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Inglewood, baby. I feel like that's a good cue anyway. If we note notes later, Lakers, it's time for Ethan to go do some work.
All right, guys.
Peace out.
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.